The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Keane Ward and Conan are here as usual on a Monday. How's it going, lads?
Great.
Yeah, all good after a good Meath win.
Well,
good Meath win, yeah, actually, and a right hammering. So there must have been a strong wind in that because I was looking at it on Twitter and I was thinking, because I had Meath in an accumulator and I was like, oh no, these are going to let me down.
Yeah, well,
it must have been a strong win, Belfast, for Meath.
Yeah, changed direction at half time. Meath were playing against it in the first half. I think it was 6-4 at half time, something like that. But really, I felt that it was only how much Meath were going to win by in the second half because Derry. All the scores they got in the first half were aided by the breeze. They were all from what I would say was kind of outside the scoring zone, around the 45-metre line or outside it. They couldn't get through the Meath blanket. So
disgusting tactics. Leinster football.
I know, it's a shame. But
he's done very well to get Meath analysis in here, the very first thing we're talking about on the show. Yeah, that's the height of cheek.
It's not too often you get a two-point half-time deficit to, what, a 15-point win or something.
If it wasn't Derry, I would not be allowing this at all. The fact that it's Derry, they have
it. Move on, it's fine, no one wants to listen to it.
Now that you mention good wins for our own county, Laois, a comeback from 5 points down, a penalty and 2 points late in the game to beat the team that we always beat, let's be honest. Was it ever in any doubt?
Not for me, anyway. Whenever when Leinster counties play the Nordies, we always get the handy way.
Apart from when the Leinster clubs play the Ulster clubs, then there's a bit of bother.
Well, there you go. Exactly. Before we get on to those club games, because they were brilliant at the weekend, I just want to talk about how spoilt we are at this time of the year. And we talk about it all the time. We know how good the league is. It's played at the wrong time of the year. There's only 3 teams across all 4 football divisions that have started with 2 wins. Like, that's an incredible stat, and it just goes to show what happens when you have teams at the same level playing each other. Enjoyable games, close games, very, very unpredictable. It's impossible to get an accumulator up, Conan. You can testify to that. I'm not going to even go into that. We might wait for Stevie McDonald to come here. But we had 2 club games at the weekend, live on TV. Air Sports showed 4 games live on Saturday night. 4 bloody games. How do we even stay on top of all this stuff? And then TG4 showed 1 live game on Sunday and a deferred game. Like, you know, this is just brilliant time for Gaelic football.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a brilliant time of the... Well, it's not a great time of the year for them to be played. Weather conditions have a big impact, but the coverage is fantastic. And you talk about the unpredictability of the games as well. I know you guys did an accumulator, but I was trying to predict them myself over the weekend, and really, it's a flick of a coin nearly with almost every game, because you're trying to base all your assumptions on the previous weekend, and you see so many times a team that gets a defeat really bounces back strong the following week. So it's fantastic for spectators really to be able to see a lot of these games. Like, it's a joy, you know, games at the opposite ends of the country, obviously Kerry, Mayo and Dublin, Tyrone. Like, it's fantastic that we get to see these matches, because you don't get to see that sort of quality again until later on in the year, or certainly that sort of competitiveness.
Yeah, what do you think of Ayr's coverage? I think it's top notch. It's really, really good. I'm like, for a supporter watching Ayr, the fact that they flick away to the other games and keep you on top and in the loop, you know, it's brilliant. From my point of view, who taped Kerry Mayo and wanted to watch it again, and I hate watching games that I know the result in because they feel a bit more like work.
Yeah.
That really annoyed me. But like, in fairness, I'm not going to paint just because that annoyed me doesn't mean that it's not a brilliant service for someone who actually wants to sit down and stay on top of 3 games at the same time.
Yeah, well, the coverage is great, but it is disappointing when there are 3 matches on at 7 p.m. all starting. Like, why not just spread it out over the day and then you could sit down and just watch all 3 games? I mean, it was a rarity though on Saturday that we got the club matches. You got 2 club matches anyway, and then you got to watch the county matches.
There was arguably too many matches this weekend.
it is hard when you consider, I think Saturday I was watching, our club had a B League game, so I was at that game. Then I got home to watch Dublin Tyrone. I didn't bother watching too much of the hurling, it was a bit one sided, and then watched the full match of Kerry Mayo and then watched the two club games and then played a game myself Sunday morning.
My God.
So, he's back. It's great.
We'll all be single very soon, lads. That's just the way it is. Quick kickouts. I just wanted to mention this beforehand. They're really doing my head in. And the reason they're doing my head in, because it's not Ayr's fault, it's not RTE's fault, it's not TG4's fault. If there's a score and show the replay of the score, now we're missing the kickouts. And the kickouts have become so important that goalkeepers are back out so quickly, they're tapping it to a cornerback, and the play has resumed by the time the TV coverage, if they're showing a replay. So you want to see a replay of a good score, where it came from, and I'd like to see where the move started and a decent replay, and then you're missing the bloody play restarting. So there has to be some way around this. These two quick kickouts, I understand it, but it's such an easy option just to tap it there. We don't even see what happened, and suddenly the play is back on the half back line.
Yeah, I know, it's terrible. They should change the rules of the game to suit the TV spectator.
Well, I tell you, it should, maybe not the TV spectator, but even the fact of the quick kickouts in general. Should I prefer it to be more of a like, I think with teams now pushing up on kickouts, it adds to the game as a spectacle, you know, really well, because your proper 50-50 challenges. And the problem with that is that you can't always push up and man up on the kickouts because it starts so quickly. So you have to actually wait for a break in play and then the team moves up. So, like, if there was maybe even some sort of restriction on how fast it can go back out or something. Maybe I'm just talking shit.
I can understand why you would think that, because it is, you know, the high feeling again with the mark being brought in. It is something that I think most GAA supporters like to see, that element of the game. And you are correct, it's completely taken away from the game when the goalkeeper can just roll the ball 20 yards. I mean, I thought it used to be it had to go outside the 21 metre line. That doesn't seem to happen. It just has to travel whatever, 13 or 20 metres. So you could actually just roll the ball out almost along the end line if you wanted to, and someone could pick it up in the corner.
Clugston's just kicking it straight across a lot of the time.
Backwards sometimes?
Yeah. Well, maybe not. Can you do it back? Well, but I get your point. It's completely directly across, which, I don't know, there's no skill in it, and it just promotes hand passing. And I don't want to go on about this too much, but, like, I mean, I'm not even talking about giving a ball out to midfield. I'm talking about, like, a ball to the wing between a wing forward on the far side. You know,
what it really does is it promotes defensive football in its entirety, because if you can't contest the opposition's kick out, you're almost wasting your time trying to get the ball off them up in your own attack. You know, you're better off just retreating back to your own half. And then we have blanket defence versus blanket defence. All, you know, across games, like the Slochneil Vincent's game was very interesting, because that's the way the game was effectively played out in a lot of cases.
It's a very good match.
Well,
yeah, we could have watched that.
It was very boring, because Slochneil just held onto the ball for what seemed like an eternity.
Colin loves that.
No, but realistically, they spent as much time running towards their own goal with the ball as they did towards the Vincent's goal. It was enthralling because it was such a tight game. But I wouldn't pay money to watch that game every weekend. I think it's nice to see a contrast in styles, but look, again, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
Like, you know, the fact that it was a semi-final as well, and it was the underdogs beating the powerhouse, it was like everything was so tense, and every time they were trying to keep possession, it was like you were just gripped watching it. I love a kick pass as much as the next man, but it's funny, we always cry about the game slowing down and that, but now we're bemoaning quick kickouts when they're actually trying to get the game going a lot quicker. I mean, like, Clugston, there's an art in that. Like, but
the quick kickout might be a quick kickout, but it promotes slow play. So, like, I mean, it's not necessarily, it's just a quick kickout. Like, that's not the full description of what it actually is, you know?
It's nearly always it's a short kickout rather than a quick kickout.
Short kickout.
But I think, you know, the biggest person to fault there is probably the director. I know it's tough, but, like, there's so much that we're watching, like, sometimes it cuts to the crowd and you're sitting looking at the crowd for 10 seconds, show the replay then. They're like, you know, they do a lot of sort of panning away and showing different things, and then while that's happening anyway, someone's scoring or someone's fighting off the ball, and they always miss this stuff, so there's plenty of opportunity to show the replay at another stage.
Yeah, maybe, but you don't want to go back three or four minutes later looking at the replay. Anyways, we've talked about too much. Yeah, you're after mentioning Vincent's and Slochneil, and I agree with you. These games are brilliant because they're slow, and any sports fan wants to see a contest. And, like, I mean, Tyrone Dublin was the same on Saturday night. This was the underdogs going to beat the favourites not letting them win, and it was a shit game, and the standard was terrible because it was a terrible night and no one could hold on to the ball going into contact. But, like, I mean, you know, you can't say these games are absolutely brilliant, but Slochneil, like, I mean, we talked about Vincent so much, about the team they have, was an inter-county team. I was slated on Twitter for predicting Vincent's Carafin final. Like, they're only the two best teams of the last 5 years. It wasn't a way out there. It was a bit of an arrogant way, the way I put it. But Vincent's have outside transfers. Slot Neil have none of this. This is the pure village versus, this is David versus Goliath, and they actually slayed Goliath. Slot Neil, sensational stuff, and you know, fair play to them. I wanted to talk about Vincent's media ban, lads, because this really bothered me at club level, and I'll tell you why. Gee, it must be 3 weeks ago now, I rang up Vincent's looking to, or I contacted one of their players and I asked them, we're obviously doing a TV show soon on Sports Joe Live. It'll be going out on Facebook Live, and I wanted to do this like skills challenge type thing, you know, a bit of crack, would have taken 10 minutes at the end of training. Wanted to do with Vincent's because they obviously have a lot of big names, you know, and it's a good time of the year to get them at. And contact one of the players, and the player says, yeah, that sounds like the players that love that kind of stuff, sure, but I can't organise it. You have to ring this selector because he is in charge of this type of thing. So I rang the selector anyways and explained to him what I wanted to do, and he said, no, we're on a strict media ban. We don't want any distractions now in the lead up to the game. This is almost 3 weeks before the semi-final. And he said, we don't want anyone doing any interviews, and because it'd just be distracting individual players. While I wouldn't agree with that, I can see where he's coming from. Some players might get distracted, other players might not. I think the players should be allowed to choose that themselves. So I explained to him, this is not an individual player, and it's not an interview. It's actually just a bit of crack. The whole squad will be involved, and it'll take 10 minutes at the end of training. No, we think that might be a distraction, and we couldn't really do that. Now, my point on this is that not putting players under more pressure? These are club players. Like, do they need to be cocooned and protected that bloody much in the lead up to a club game? Or should club level be a little step below intercounty level and those same pressures not applied to these fellas?
Well, I think that's a bit mad, to be honest with you. It doesn't really make any sense to me.
This is kicking a ball into a target, for example.
Well, if anything, it promotes the club in their own locality as well. So I really don't understand the wisdom of that. And as you say, something like that is a bit of fun. Look, it's a different story if you're, you know, trying to get a real in-depth interview with some guy the week before a game and they've never, you know, experienced stuff like that before. Yeah. I mean, I think that's slightly different. Some guys handle that better than others. But yeah, something like that, it's a little bit much, but look, who knows? Everybody has their own prerogative in these things. You wouldn't know what the reason behind it is.
I kind of learned the hard way with these kind of things. I remember doing an interview, it was with the Sunday papers before Leinster final, and because I answer questions very honestly, it was in my mind that morning to buy this paper to see how it turned out so that how I would come across.
Yeah.
And I don't think you need that distraction on the morning of a match. You don't need that at all. And I found it did distract me. I found it didn't play well. Now, I can't blame it all in that interview. It's like
sounds
silly.
Like you are, didn't it?
No, but it's the fact, like, I was marking John Keane. I didn't play well. I think there's if that interview hadn't come out, the same conclusion, you know what I mean? The same outcome from the game probably would have happened anyway. But I just remember that morning being a little bit distracted by it. So I can understand, but I learned from that. Like, these players aren't even getting an opportunity to learn, you know, about making these mistakes. These mistakes are all about experience. And like, if it's just being taken away from you, how can you learn and grow as a player and as a person and what works for you and what doesn't?
Are we guilty in the media, though, of thinking that this is more of an issue than what it is? Like, and especially if you look at, like, look how Brendan Rodgers, the Slot Neil fullback, reacted to your tweet a few months later. You know, that is the sort of thing that teams thrive off. Like, and maybe they don't want to be bothered doing the interviews, and they like that sort of same mentality. So we're not talking to you, we're going to just focus on this match.
Slot Neil had no ban.
No,
Slot
I know
Neil
that.
Are very open to the media.
But
like,
I'm just saying in general.
The point I'd love to make on this is, now Vincent's lost. If Vincent's had done a lot of media in the lead up to this game and they lost, immediately say, oh, they were all over the papers. Why does the media ban not get the same bad press as what, you know, doing a lot of interviews for? Why is no one saying, well, that media ban contributed to Vincent's losing? It's always the opposite way around. Why can't we start publicising the teams that lose that have media bans and try and link this added pressure and this kind of restrictions on your own life? What if some of these fellas are tradesmen, have their own businesses? What if they'd like a little bit of a light shone upon them? What chance do club players have for this? This is the only time the national media is really, really shining on club players, and they're taking that opportunity away from them.
Yeah, look. I agree with most of what you're saying. It is a difficult one to gauge. Some guys just don't really like talking about. Some guys actually aren't really able to talk about the game anyway.
No.
They go out and they play the game, and that's it. And they love playing the game, and they love being part of that. But anything outside of that, they don't want to know about. They don't really care. They just want to turn up and play. So, look, you could have a group of guys that are very much like that, and they're just not overly interested in dealing with any of the media side of things. Like, I know in my own club, I'd say, nobody'd really have any interest in doing any of that sort of stuff. Like, if we were ever successful or got to a county final, like, I mean, talking to the local radio would be, you know, a stretch for some lads. They just wouldn't feel comfortable doing it. They don't really want to do it because they've never done it before. Whereas you could have some guys that are, maybe they do a lot of talking in their work, or they're just better at that side of things, or more comfortable in that arena, and it suits them better. So, but look, I would kind of, maybe they're just, the Vincent guys are maybe just trying to protect their own lads. It's very hard.
It's misguided protection, though, I think.
Well, that's your opinion on it. I mean, you don't know all those Vincent's lads. You know, so maybe a lot of those guys have no interest in talking. They're not, it's not their thing. But as you say, maybe there are some guys there that would love to maybe get their name out there, or plug something that they're doing, or get something out there. They have an interesting story to tell. But I do think, yeah, you're right that at this time of the year, it's about promoting those club games, because we're talking a lot about the National League games, but those club All-Ireland semi-finals, and you know, there's an intermediate All-Ireland final this weekend and junior final, like, they are absolutely massive, massive games for those clubs. And it's actually a bit of a pity that there isn't more coverage of the junior and intermediate finals, because you'd actually in some cases probably get incredibly interesting stories from those clubs as well, because they're probably from much smaller areas than obviously the senior clubs in a lot of these counties. So, you know, there's probably far more interesting things, and I would have thought, generally speaking, that clubs would be far more open to it. Look, Vincent's is one example, but sure, look at it. Maybe they're just mirroring what's happening with their county team, where nobody talks to anybody and there's no information getting out. It's just their philosophy. But if you were down maybe talking to, trying to get some word from the Glenbeigh, Glencar club or something, you know, they're playing the junior final, like, I'm sure that they'd be very open to it, because they'd be so proud of what they're after achieving to this point. Like, for Vincent's, getting to a semi-final, I wouldn't say it means nothing to them, but their sights are a lot higher, whereas for other teams, it's just a monumental achievement to get as far as they've gotten, that it's, they would want to share that with people and get their name out there. So maybe it's just, look, it's maybe one, hopefully one example, but I wouldn't like to see that as being the main trend, because I would like to read and hear from, you know, these areas that are achieving stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you apologised to Slochnil yet for your dismissive tweet?
I know, I actually don't even want to get into that, because, like, I mean, I've been tormented all weekend by this these Derry supporters, because I predicted. Anyways, I'm not even going to get
an apology, that's all we're after.
I will not be apologising for any prediction. Lads, right, Dublin and Tyrone on Saturday night. What a shite match, let's be honest. Now, I'm not blaming either team, because, like, I mean, Tyrone played defensively, they're brilliant at tackling, they get so many bodies back. Like, I mean, Dublin really didn't have a chance trying to get through that kind of thing, not when it's like 0 degrees, very, very windy and lashing down rain as well. Like, it just, the conditions, I was really disappointed with the conditions, because I would, like, there was a tactical battle that was going to go on that will probably happen when they play in the championship, but we never really got a really good indication of how it's going to pan out.
No, well, it was a very interesting contrast. Well, you know, contrast in size. Tyrone play their way, and that's just it. And how they play and how they set up, it dictates the terms of the game. Much like when Donegal, well, I wouldn't say Donegal started it, but when Donegal really brought it in of the 13 or 14 men behind the ball and at times 15, it totally dictates the tempo of every game they play.
Yeah.
Because no matter what way you want to play, they dictate the terms. So you might want to play this lovely expansive kicking game. Doesn't matter. If they have 14 men behind the ball, can't do it. Not possible. Or you're just going to keep giving them the ball. So that's always interesting in its own right, particularly when it's in Croke Park, because you see it played out across the country now. I'd say if you're at many National League games, they're probably all quite similar in terms of if one team sets up defensively, the other team has to automatically mirror them in some way so that they're not getting exposed on the counter-attack. The conditions suited Tyrone, I would say, at the weekend, because
definitely,
look, Dublin were going to probably have more of the possession in the game and, you know, attack Tyrone more. They wouldn't get as many bodies back as Tyrone, so, you know, they had the pressure on. But if you're trying to work the ball through, that's such a tight defence. Also, the wind was a massive factor. Like, there was no way Dublin could even attempt to kick a point from range in the first half. And in the second half, I was surprised, actually. I mean, look, Fenton got an absolute fluke of a score when he was trying to lob it into the square. Like that just showed you how strong the wind was.
He ran away, actually. Usually if you were going for that, you're celebrating that. He just caught it flush and it just went over. He knew right well.
These guys that aren't used to getting scores at all, they just don't realise how to celebrate. Like you celebrate every score as if you meant it. Like if you know these ones, like I think was it Gavin O'Shea for Dr. Crokes when he tried to kick the point and it dropped in. I mean, there's no way I would have been in a cartwheel or something as if I spotted the keeper off his line. Yeah, he looked embarrassed. Yeah. So, I mean, these guys need to up their game big time if they're going to get away with this stuff.
I actually did it in a county final and I lied to my father the next day. I was out on the sideline and I'm not a long range point scorer, never was, but it was on the 45 metre line on the sideline and I went to give a cross field ball, not even a high one. This will tell you how badly I miskicked it into the full forward and it came off my boot. It was like Morris Fitzgerald's point that swerved lovely and I remember my father says, geez, you got a great early score there. What were you going for a score? I said, I looked sure, I had the wind and, you know. But it was a pure fluke, but I celebrated it. I went, absolutely not. I am not accepting that this
is... Did you give it the double arm fist pump and all that?
The lads were laughing. Like players know a fluke of a pint a mile away. Like Fenton's was a fluke. But it is true, Conan, Dublin did... Like, I mean, the conditions did suit Tyrone because, like, little short hand passes, ball hitting chest, falling, you know, scrappy. It was a backs night and Tyrone had 14 backs. So, yeah. Like, it was bound to be.
They set up a 5 half forwards in their forward line. So straight away, you saw McShane and Bradley were listed in the full forward line. So you knew what way they were going. And even McCurry, like, you know, he can drop with the best of them. Like, but I thought Tyrone were brilliant. Like, you know, whatever way they set up and whatever they're doing... or whatever way they're forcing Dublin to play. I mean, they're going to play Dublin, so there's no real other option. Like, what do you do? You can't take them on.
No, absolutely not. I think Tyrone were superb, really, in terms of the way they set up. They made it absolutely impossible at times for Dublin to make any inroads into their defence. And they were quite unlucky, actually. I mean, the Mick Fitzsimons free at the end.
That was pathetic.
That was a terrible decision.
In that. And in fairness now, I know he made a fantastic... tackle on Sean Kavanagh to turn over and he was influential in winning that free at the end, but he would be very disappointed. I mean, the tackle that he put in for the Tyrone goal as the last defender, I mean, was pretty weak, pretty poor, and he'd be disappointed with that, because that goal was really the thing that gave Tyrone something to hang on to. And I don't know whether they got tired or whether they really just went into their shell. You know, they were playing for the final whistle in the last 10 minutes, and listen, it potentially was fatigue because of the, you know, the amount of effort they put into the game. But really, if they're to overturn Dublin, they need to, in that last 10 minutes, you know, you need to get up the field and get, you know, get another score. Or certainly, if you're losing possession, you're losing it right up in the Dublin defence. You know, they just couldn't break through the Dublin. The Dublin press, and look, it has to be down to tired legs. You have to give Dublin huge credit as well.
14 men probably didn't help them either.
Sean Kavanagh was very poor when he came on too. He lost the ball on a few different occasions. Like, I mean, getting to the pitch of that game, I can only imagine how difficult that was. Coming on, you're freezing. You know, he wanted to make an impression, but every time he seemed to get the ball, he seemed to get turned over. You know, he didn't have that impact that you know, maybe he'd hope for.
Yeah, well, I think when Tyrone are bringing him in, they want him to have an influence further up the pitch, maybe.
Yeah.
And in fairness to him, he got through a hell of a lot of work and got his hands on a good bit of ball. And look, he was caught for one of the Dublin scores, but he gave away the penalty as well, which, look, it was a last-ditch tackle. I mean, look, it could have been anybody else. It was just unfortunate for him that it was him on that occasion. But look, Dublin, you have to give them huge credit again. I know I'm sick praising them, but, like, to come back... From that deficit, I know they had the breeze with them, but like Dublin looked out on their feet. Like Tyrone, you would imagine have a huge volume of, you know, training done, because they would have been focusing on the league. Dublin, I know we talked about them last week, how fit they were and how impressive they were when they were just back from holidays and stuff like that. But like Dublin really had to empty their reserves to get something out of that game. Like I don't know what happened, James McCarthy. To me, it looked like he was gone off with severe cramp. You know, after putting in such an effort,
he kind of flicked the ball back, like he might have done his ankle when he did it. He just kind of flicked the ball back behind him, and it was the way he flicked it off the outside of his boot. Maybe he turned his ankle then, because he seemed to be in an awful lot of pain for nothing that obvious.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's nothing too serious, because he's a great player and he's really good to watch as well. You know, from a neutral, or maybe not so neutral, against the Dubs, but you know, he is a good player to watch. He's quite elegant. But look, Dubs again, like I don't know where they pull it from. And Dean Rock, great, great credit to him for kicking that score. Like, it was difficult, difficult night for a free taker, and for him to nail that at the end with tired legs, like, the set, you know, those long range frees, the last one, you know, you don't want to be kicking them from there in the 70th minute of the game. Yeah. Like, fair enough, in the first few minutes you'd have a bit more in the tank, but after playing for 70 minutes in those conditions and then come up with that sort of a monster kick, yeah, it's very impressive. Yeah.
Two things I want to talk about before we move on is Dublin's full press towards the end of the game. The pressure Tyrone were under when Dublin actually pressed them so far up the field, that often with these defensive systems you have a couple of men over in the defence and you can work it up because you have those extra bodies, take a 1-2 and move you up the field. When Dublin actually gave them no extra man back there, how difficult it was. Now, I know Tyrone were tired towards the end, but how difficult Tyrone found it to actually get up the field when they're being manned up on all over the field. Yeah. Like, why don't teams do this Jenna pressing GA style? Like, I know Mayo did it under Horan, but Mayo have gone away from it as well. I think it plays into these defensive teams' hands to allow them those extra bodies to build up through the, you know what I mean, through the play, and then stop them closer to your goal. Why not stop them at source?
I suppose at that stage it was sort of, they were going to lose anyway, so they sort of, they had to do something. They had nothing to lose by going.
But why wait till then? Because Tyrone actually did it on Mayo in the quarterfinal last year, and Mayo really under pressure back in their defence trying to get it out. You know,
and that's
really
the mentality thing that Keane's talking about as well. Then Tyrone, like, they had the lead, they were just crying out for the whistle to go so they could win it, and they lost Mark Bradley as well then, and you know, losing a man in that system where all they rely on is popping and popping and going again. Like, when you lose one man, that's a hell of a difference, especially for 20 minutes. Not just numbers wise getting out, but legs wise as well. But I think it was a bit of a victory for Tyrone. Like, you know, listening to Mickey Hart afterwards, normally he'd be spitting fellers after what happened. Like, everyone was giving off about Joe McQuillan and the red card. We didn't actually see what happened. Although, to be honest, Mark Bradley didn't look too surprised when he gave him the red card. He just walked off.
I'd say he gave Cooper a dig, but Cooper's winds his man, direct man up. Like, you need a calm head when you're marking him.
But they lost Tiernan McCann to the Black. He had a bit of a pop at that, but I just thought it was funny. He had this little smile on his face almost, and he was talking about, "Oh, Dublin are champions. They're champions. They're hard to beat. They take some beating. You know, this is why they're so good." Really picking up how good Dublin were. And in my mind, like, normally you would see Mickey Hart going crazy after a game like that, losing a 5-point lead, losing a man, but he was just sort of had this little wry smile where, to me, it seemed like, you know, they realise now that they're good enough.
Yeah, it was half a Dublin team though, and it's Tyrone's full team. That needs to be put into context kind of as well, you know.
Yeah, and again, I'm back to the volume of work they've done. I think the way I look at it, maybe sometimes you know when you come back from an injury, your first game back you can be flying, and then next week you could be going, "Jesus, my legs are gone here," because you haven't got the work done. Maybe Dublin had that bit of a bounce, you know, bit of adrenaline got them through the Cavan game, and a week later,
and a weaker team too, and a better day.
They didn't have their full defence and midfield though, in fairness. Like, the only player they were really missing was Keane O'Sullivan
back to the thing of Dublin pressing up near the end of the game. I think it's a very effective tactic late in a game when the opposing team are really tired, because nobody really has the power in the legs at that stage to break a tackle or break two tackles and really get away from people. So if they beat the first tackle in that scenario, there's always a second body, and the support runners just aren't coming because they're shattered. And again, like that, maybe they're just being a little bit more conservative. Yeah. So I'm sure that's something that Tyrone will look to work on, because if they can get out past that line of press, you know, they have an absolute certainty of a score. If they have somebody that can break in over the top, you know, the Dubs are not going to have it in the legs to turn and get back after them at that stage of a game, because you're putting so much energy into the press. If it goes over your head, there's just that split second where guys just freeze a little. So that's a key area where I think Tyrone will target. Yeah. But they really will have learned a lot from the game, Tyrone, and a huge confidence booster to them.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that we might see more of in the summer, this kind of press, this late press. Even not when the game is desperate, you know, it seems to happen when you're desperate. Let's just try and do it maybe 50 minutes to go. Even, you know, you don't have to be desperate to do it. Do it as an actual tactic. Change. Let's go, you know, man for man. But Jim Gavin's actually, we'll move off Dublin in a second. Oh, I actually wanted to talk about Niall Sludden, but we'll talk about him in performance of the week.
Holy Christ.
Jim Gavin afterwards, he was a little bit rattier than you usually hear Jim Gavin. Like, I mean, Jim Gavin is, you know, he's a plowmaster of the highest order. But he says, like, he specified that Tyrone are like a really defensive team, and they're 5 points up, they decided to sit back and try and close the game out. Our boys don't play like that, and we always attack as best they can. Okay, Dublin don't play with two full-time sweepers, but like to say that Dublin don't play like that at times during a match is wrong as well. Like, I mean, if you don't play sweepers against Dublin, they won't play them. But that's not to say if you play sweepers, Dublin won't leave two of their men back and drop their half-forwards back. Everyone's playing a certain type of defensive game. You know, Dublin's philosophy might be all-out attack, but to say Dublin don't play like that... Okay, technically he might be right, but in games they do play like that.
I hate this stigmatism around defensive, like, you know, as if that's a stick to beat Tyrone with. So what if they're a defensive team, you're an attacking team? Like, you know, it's as arbitrary as calling a team attacking. Like, it's a way to play football. It's not like they're a cheating team. It's not like they're, you know.
Ah, well, that has been levelled at them.
Well, that's you saying that. But like, I hate this, and it's disappointing to hear Jim Gavin say there's nothing wrong with beating a team playing defensively. Like, what?
Yeah,
why aren't you allowed to do that?
This is the thing. Tyrone very rarely beat the big teams playing that defensive style. I want to make that point again because I made it last Thursday, and I think we'll leave that one there.
They're coming.
Mayo and Kerry, lads, because we talked here, Keane, you weren't here last Thursday, about Mayo and them being written off by a lot of people over one game. Absolute madness stuff. And we talked potentially about rejigging their team around, and that's exactly what they did on Saturday night. They put Killian O'Connor out in the half forward line, something I would love to have a look at him. He was all right. I thought Kevin McLaughlin kind of playing as a link man half forward line, a brilliant option for an out ball breaking left and right, and his distribution then when he gets it with the diagonal balls, he has to move back to the half forward line. End of story. Centre half forward, potentially Aidan O'Shea then in with Andy Moore, and even Killian O'Connor maybe in the half forward line distributing in. You know, suddenly Mayo have such a good first 15. Maybe just a rejig rather, and Dave Cohen, who can actually make that number six position his own, like a proper centre half back, big physical. They might not need the sweeper anymore. They might just need to rejig things around.
Well, I think Mayo are generally at their best when they go at the game. They made a couple of interesting switches at half time in the game the other night, which kind of turned things a little bit in their favour. They put Boyle back to centre half back, and they stuck Cohen into midfield. And I thought that made a difference because Jack Barry was causing them all sorts of problems in the first half. Class. He was superb in the first half, and he looks like a hell of a player and a real prospect for Kerry. But look, Kerry, in the absence of James O'Donoghue and with Geaney going off, like they really had nothing up front. Like Keane was good. He got 1-3, maybe, did he? So he was a threat. But outside of him, Jack Savage was getting on the ball, but very, very deep. And really there was nobody else was really making any inroads in the second half, in particular from Kerry. So Mayo worked very hard. They really kind of, they outworked maybe Kerry in some respects, and they just forced them into so many mistakes. Like the pressure they put on, even in the first half of the game, they were putting them under a lot of pressure at stages, you know, swarm tackling. Like a Kerry man would get the ball, to be 2 to 3 or 4 Mayo men at times trying to get around them and swarm them. And look, at Killian O'Connor missed 2 fairly poor frees in the first half that would have put, you know, a different reflection on the scoreboard at half time. But fair play to them, they came out in the second half and they continued to do what they always do, which is they're bloody relentless and they don't stop, and they don't stop right until the final whistle. Like, they keep going. Like, even Monaghan beat them by a point. Was it a point in the first round?
A point, but beat them a bit more convincingly than that. It could have been 2 in the end. Yeah.
It was a tight game, and Mayo were pressing right until the final whistle. You know, they were turned over on the Monaghan 21-metre line. So it's not like Mayo, when they're beaten, are ever hockeyed. Like, they're just barely beaten. So criticism of Mayo, I just think it's madness, because they've shown how good they are. I mean, how many times do they have to prove that they're a serious, serious outfit, and they take serious beating. And to go down to Killarney, beat Kerry, I know it was a weakened Kerry team, but they still went out and beat what was in front of them. And Mayo didn't have everybody either, you know, so it's huge credit to them. And it kind of puts them back on the road too, that they'd be looking to, I'd say, get to a league final again.
Yeah, and a kind of finding a couple of new defenders can release McLaughlin into the forwards, and suddenly beat that forward line looks a little bit more beefed up with his speed.
Yeah.
So I think that's what Mayo are missing a bit. Outside of Dermot O'Connor, do they have electric pace up there? And, you know, but McLaughlin provides that.
They found a forward. Sigerson Cup medal. He's won club championships. He's won a few Connacht titles as well. He happens to be 33. And he's called Andy Moran. Like, how good was he?
Yeah,
on
he
Saturday
was very
night?
Good. But Jesus Christ, Eamon Fitzmaurice left Griffin on him the whole game, and Griffin and marking him from behind. Like, is the one thing you're going out to mark Andy Moran? And the reason I know this is because I played full forward in almost the identical same role as Andy Moran. Not saying I was as good as him, but I played the same role, as in I will always be out in front of my man. What did I love? I love my man Mark from behind, because yeah, that made my job so much easier. Griffin behind him the whole night. Now, unless Fitzmaurice was giving Griffin enough rope to hang himself and said, look, because it makes no sense why he would leave him on Moran to be taken to the cleaners like that.
I used to complain about a guy in our club who would mark me in training from about 15 yards in front of me, and I'd be like, what are you doing? You wouldn't do that in a match. Come on and mark me properly, because I wanted him behind me as well. But he'd always say, I would mark you in a match like this. Yeah. I couldn't get the ball.
But anyone with pace like that, watch Johnny Cooper in the two All-Ireland finals marking Andy Moran. He's marking him from 5 yards in front, and Andy Moran's kind of snookered because he's not going to get that quality ball. There's so much pressure in the middle third. Cooper has the yard on him, so you find Andy Moran trying to head off at an angle, and Cooper's just going across and closing off that angle. And it's like, do not mark Andy Moran from behind.
Yeah, and he destroyed Tipperary last year as well in the semi-final when he gave him a bit of space.
I think it comes down to pressure on the ball out the field, and in fairness to Killian O'Connor, a lot of the time he was getting on the ball in a nice little pocket of space and popping them in front of Andy Moran, so the delivery into him at times was very good, and his movement is pretty much as good as you get out there. Now, I would make the point that he does tend to win a lot of his possession outside the scoring zone, and oftentimes, you know, it's recycled back, so, you know, he allows them to creep up the field.
But he's a target man. He's not a Kieran Donaghy target man, but he's still a target man in a different sense.
He's excellent at what he's doing for Mayo, and what was good at the weekend was he turned Griffin on a few occasions and made him look very ordinary. And Griffin, in fairness to him, has been around a few years, and it's not too often he gets exposed, so he's obviously very good. But Andy Moran put in a good performance, good delivery into him, loads of space inside because he was effectively playing in a one-man full forward line for a lot of the game. So he deserves huge credit because he's very, very consistent, and he's a great leader for Mayo, because when the game is in the melting pot, where you're, you know, point up, point down, you just need somebody to get on the ball and show hard and want possession. He's never found wanting there. He always shows hard. He never goes missing. He never goes hiding. And in any team to have a character like that who wants the ball, you know, it's brilliant, because the man on the ball out the field, all he wants is the obvious option. Yeah. I'm under serious pressure here. Somebody needs to give me the obvious run, something that I can't ignore, and Andy Moran consistently does that.
But and that's the thing, Keenan, you'll know, like, you were a scoring forward. You don't want to make that break to the sideline, because you know when you get it out there, your man's going to be going side of it. You're going to be slapped, and you've no real options when you get out there. I would have made that run because I wasn't a scorer and I was happy enough to go out there. You know, Andy Moran is completely selfless. Now, Andy Moran can score as well, but, like, I think his main qualities in there is his ball winning, and he'll run for any bloody ball. And like you said, wing backs must love him, midfielders must love him. Oh, I'm under pressure, I'm looking up, here's this fella running to the wing. He's not going to score from out there, but he's just making life so much easier on everybody else.
Yeah, I totally agree. And what he needs is help in there, something different. So look, if they end up playing Aidan O'Shea as the second man in there, what happens is Andy Moran makes that run to the wing. Generally speaking, a team with one sweeper, the first run always draws the sweeper.
Yeah.
So if Andy Moran makes that run to the wing, he gets the ball, sweeper is out doubling up, ball is popped back. You should, in a lot of cases, have a one-on-one inside with potentially an Aidan O'Shea or somebody whose just primary focus is to score. Mayo, I think, just at the minute, or certainly not just at the minute, but over the last number of years, they haven't had somebody whose sole interest is, I don't care about doing anything else other than scoring. A Bernard Brogan, if you want. Somebody who has no interest in getting involved in general play, just wants to come on the loop at the last second and pull the trigger.
Well, O'Connor should be that man, you know. He is a finisher now. He's not really fast enough, but if Moran makes that break and then you've got Aidan O'Shea in there, Killian O'Connor should be feeding off that, should be doubling back off that. They have the players to play that way.
They do have the players, and look, maybe Killian O'Connor is the man, but he has been kind of drifting out the field. Last season he drifted out the field a hell of a lot, so maybe he's getting frustrated. Maybe
frustrated,
he needs to get on the ball.
Because he's being marked from the front from the Coopers and these lads, and he can't get out past them. Like, being marked from the front is very difficult in intense games.
Well, when you don't have electrifying pace, it can be very, very tough, particularly in the likes of Croke Park, where the ball coming in is coming from such a long distance away that the defender doesn't have to worry about the ball going over the top.
No, not as much. That's the difference.
You have to be... You have to be a bit like Bernard Brogan, where he doesn't care if he only touches the ball three times in the game, no. as long as he gets three shots off.
Yeah.
And every team needs somebody who's willing to do that. And like, it can be very, very frustrating for the man in there, because you're thinking, geez, I need to move here. And everybody's saying, why is he not moving? But like, the Gooch spoke about it before, I heard him interviewed. He was talking about sometimes the best way to create space is to stand still.
Yeah, it's to not move at all. Not I thought that was a great which, comment. And he's right.
He is right. He's 100% right, because particularly against a team with a lot of bodies back, it's amazing the amount of times if you just stand in on the edge of the square, watch at the time, the next time you see a league game, the play will come up the field and the blanket defence will be set up around the 45-metre line. The ball will be passed over and back and over and back. And the longer the ball stays out there, the more players drift out, and all of a sudden, if you look up, if there's one man, it's always one on one inside.
There's a pocket in
there.
There's
always a pocket of space in there if you can stay patient enough. And if the guys out the field have it in their head, if they're looking for it, the opportunities are there.
Yeah, no, listen, that's great analysis, because you often notice that there is that little space between the 45 and the full forward line, and it's never really knocked over into it, you know. But maybe that's because some players are running out of there in their desperation to get it. Right, listen, we've gone a bit over time there, so we'll be back in a second and we'll talk to Sligo's Mark Breheny.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great. Yeah, there was maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible and unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, backing club and county.
All right, so Sligo are second in Division 3 after playing two top favourites in the group, Armagh and Tipperary. Obviously, drew with Armagh, beat Tipperary at the weekend. And we have veteran forward Mark Breheny on the line. Is it all right to call you a veteran, Mark?
Absolutely, yeah. I've been called worse things now. Yeah, I don't mind that title at all, Colin. I suppose being around a long time is part and parcel now, I suppose, of this now at this stage. So still enjoying it anyway, that's the main thing.
That's the thing. You're actually the longest serving player now that Dick Clerkin has hung up his boots. He had started in the league, I think, at the end of 99. You started in 2000. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. I would have come on against Mead, Colin. It would have been pre Christmas of 2000, and we were playing Mead in the league that day in Navan, I remember. Made my debut and come on that day, and we bet them, I think, by a point or two. I think they might have been Leinster champions from that particular year of 2000. So I think it was October, November of 2000. I made my league debut and playing ever since. So enjoying every minute of it still. Really, I think I still have that enthusiasm that I had even coming on that day still, which is great. I know, kind of in between that period, you know, sometimes your motivation would. You know, probably go down a little bit from year to year, but I have to say I still have the hunger now at the moment, which is great.
I suppose this year you've started the league so well. Where is that hunger coming from? Is there a new kind of input of young fellas into the squad, or is this just personally yourself?
I think the last 2 years was very much a transitionary period for us, where when Niall Crew first came in, we'd lost a lot of experienced players, and a lot of young fellas had to be bedded in and kind of given experience. So it was about kind of keeping the show on the road for the last 2 years. We wanted to make sure we maintain our status in Division 3, maybe to leave a bit of a legacy for a lot of the young lads coming through, but also try to push for that Division 2 spot as well. Now, we fell short on two occasions the last 2 years. We did get to a Connacht final, which was, probably looking back, was a great bonus at the time. Now, this year, we do have lads coming back, good experienced players that were kind of around the scene of 2010, 2012, plus a lot of very, very good young players. Because I'd have kind of personal contact with a lot of young lads, being a coach here in Summerhill College, and haven't seen them play in the last number of years. So for me, I feel they're an exceptional, talented group, And I think, you know, if we keep our heads down and keep working hard, we could go places this year, but it's early days yet.
Yeah, right, because I was thinking that, because I was reading in 2014 you were thinking about leaving it. All your family went down to a qualifier game in Cork, thinking that this was going to be your last game, but you obviously knew something the rest of us didn't know.
Yeah, well, I know, I mean, and sometimes you come to the end of the season and you think, right, that's definitely it, and all of a sudden something just sparks that little bit of kind of go again inside you and say, right, you know what, I might be just able to, my body's feeling good, I still have that goal to win a second Connacht medal, to reach an All-Ireland semi-final, which I haven't done yet. I played in a few All-Ireland quarter-finals, and maybe an elusive All-Star could just come at some stage, but I suppose you keep believing and hoping for these things, and sometimes they may come true, so I would be a positive person like that, you know.
You're probably the perfect person to talk to this about, Mark, because your career's obviously spanned the game. I started back in 1998 myself, and it was a completely different landscape back then. So, you know, people talk about the enjoyment being gone out of the game, that it's gone too professional, that, you know, players are robots now. And, you know, they're thinking back to maybe the 80s and the 90s. Like, what's your take on that?
No, I have to say I've really embraced the science side of things in the last number of years, and only for it, really. I wouldn't have prolonged my career. I love the nutritional side of things, the extra, you know, the different things regarding strength and conditioning. That has brought my career and prolonged my career for so many years now, especially with there's this band work you can do, and it's kind of more prehab stuff than actually getting an injury and then running to a physio, which I would have did for a lot of years. Now it's kind of getting the body ready for battle more than anything else. So I think everyone grows up and you love to be a professional. Maybe, you know, we are all looking across the water and looking at soccer and saying, wouldn't it be great to be a professional with Man United? But I think I like the professional side of things, that the way the GAA has gone in a lot of ways, where fellas now are looking after the bodies a lot better, and it's certainly something that I've embraced, and I think a lot of fellas around the country like that kind of professional element. I know you could say the fun has gone out of it, but I think fellas would prefer to take it seriously and work really hard at it than just kind of half do it and not enjoy it then, you know.
Yeah, you see, you're coming from a time where it might have been two times a week. I often talk about the young fellas now that are coming into squads, they actually know no different. You know, they're just coming into a squad.
Yeah.
They're training four or five times a week, and that's inter-county life for them. You kind of know a different life and this life. But I suppose, you know, you're getting older too, and it's easier maybe give those commitments when you're not out and about every weekend, you know, and looking to enjoy
Absolutely.
Yourself when you're younger.
Yeah. No, exactly. That's it. I do know that when I started playing, again, going back to those kind of the early noughties, and it was a good way, because there wasn't too many other club members, say, of mine on the county panel at the time. So I was going into a county panel, wasn't, you know, too friendly with other lads on the panel. But at the time, there might have been a two-week gap between National League games. I remember Division 1 we were playing at the time. So it was a case, you played the match on a Sunday. I was in college at the time. We'd have a few pints. You'd go into the local pubs in Sligo Town here. And that's how kind of you built bonds and you built relationships with other lads from other clubs, and in some ways that's probably gone a little bit. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? I think there probably is still a bit of manoeuvre for having those few pints, and I can certainly, I know the scientific side of things wouldn't say, right, it's not good for recovery, but I think on the long term plan, you know, to have that opportunity to go out together, even if you win, you discuss the great win. If you lose, you kind of discuss how you're going to improve things for the following match. And sometimes maybe over a drink or two, that could solve a lot of problems as well. So I still think there's still a bit of manoeuvre for that kind of situation. But it's just the way fellas are, in fairness, fellas like to be in good shape coming into training. They want to have that recovery properly done, whether it's a pool session the next day and get the fluid straight away in, the good fluid straight away in after a match. So it's just trying to get that balance right. There's a small window to get these things right, and it's hard to get it perfect, you know. But at the moment, in my current situation, you know, I've a young boy and wife, and it probably just, it doesn't lend itself anyway, so I'm probably happier the way it is at the moment anyways. But
yeah,
I know lads are probably suffering a little bit socially, you know, they probably miss out on certain weekends and that they could be at things. But again, I would have sacrificed a lot over the years, so that's just the nature of the game. And I think if you want to be in it and you're enjoying it, nobody's forcing fellas to do this. You get very well looked after, I think, you know, regarding the food and the gear situation, and the expenses have gone up again this year, so it's not too bad, you know.
Yeah, your nephew Keen is on the panel, which I don't know how you felt about that when you saw him coming in onto the squad. How do you relate to the younger players on the squad, Mark? Like, I'm not trying to paint a picture that you're that old, but like, I mean, yeah. I'm not on Snapchat. I think I'm too old for it, and I'm 38. You know, there's the Tinder, there's all these things that they're talking about that you might be out of the loop as this older fella on the squad.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I was just chatting about it coming home on the bus last night. It's funny, when I was 21, I won a county. I was 20. Sorry, I won a county title with my local club, St Mary's, and I thought older. Like, there was older fellas on our squad at the time, and I thought, looking back, and I said, yeah, they were a lot older than me, a good bit older, I thought. But they're only 27, 28. But I thought they were ancient.
Yeah.
And now I look back and. At the moment, I'm playing up front with a fellow called Paddy O'Connor and Kyle Cawley. Paddy's 18, and I'm 36. I'm twice his age, and I don't want to think about it too much, but there is a big gap there. And it's funny now, so at the dinner table now, it's a case, the lads, it's all on their phones. Even we you can set up, you can watch. We were watching the Ireland rugby match on the Saturday, you know, while you're having the food. Like, so I suppose things are changing as technology is moving on. As you say, with all this stuff, I try to avoid any of the Snapchats anyways, but I'm not too bad on Twitter and a few things like that. So try to catch up with them and keep up with them is the hard thing.
Yeah, because I suppose it is a challenge. You have to create bonds with fellas because they're teammates, and yet they're in a social situation. They would never be friends, if you know what I mean.
Yes. And so for me, I mean, I would have coached them from schools. I haven't taught any of the lads at the moment now that are on our panel, but I was their coach in Summerhill with them. So some of them are coming through. And no, I think I have a good relationship. I certainly don't act like you're. So I think 36 years ago was probably a mature. It was an older 36 year old, if you get what I'm saying. That yeah. I think I'm trying to keep young as much as I can. And trying to relate to them as much as I can, but no, there's definitely that gap between us, right? But as I said, kind of originally, there is older lads that have come back into our squad, so I'm probably more. There's a few lads with kids as well, so we kind of have our chats about that as well. So no, there's a good, and overall there's a good, very good bond amongst the squad.
A good bond, yeah. Yeah, sorry.
Give you a good laugh, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned players back. Ross Donovan's back this year, Tony Taylor, Stephen Gilmartin, Stephen Cohen, they're all back. Division 3 is a pretty high standard this year. Like, I mean, everyone's beating everyone. You're sitting in second place at the moment. You know, it's just impossible to call any of these results. Louder a surprise package. Armagh are second from bottom. Like, I mean, anyone can go up out of this division.
Yeah, and I think you can look across all the divisions, really, and it's just so hard to predict from week to week. I mean, I think I was looking at the result this morning. It was Carlow. Carlow had a great result against Westmeath last week, and then London met them this week. So it's just very difficult to predict, and especially Division 3. And we found that over the years that, you know, we're stuck there now since the end of 2011. But it's just, it's from week to week. If there's any complacency, if you take the eye off the ball at all, some of the matches just come down right to the wire, and it's just a kick of a ball. So now we have a break of kind of a weekend off next weekend, and we have Antrim, and I know Antrim have lost their first two games, so they're going to be a wounded animal coming into that game. So we're going to have to be awfully bit them very well yesterday, but we know there's going to be a big kick in them the next day. So we have to be on the ball, or we'll be bet. So it's intriguing. It is, I have to say. You're looking at, we've only five games left, but sometimes it comes down to scoring difference. I remember a couple of years ago, 2010. We got promoted with Antrim, but actually Wexford ourselves and Antrim ended up in 10 points apiece, and Wexford bet ourselves and Antrim in the league, but it came down to scoring difference. So Wexford got knocked out on scoring difference, having bet ourselves and Antrim.
Right.
So it's just the nature of the beast now with certain divisions, you know.
Yeah.
And we're probably taking every game as it comes, but just having that extra experience in the squad this year hopefully will provide us with enough points to do it over the line. But it's going to be tight now again.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be tight. Well, listen, you definitely sound like you have your enthusiasm anyways. There's no doubt about that. Mark, thanks very much for taking the call. Best of luck for the year.
Yeah, no problem, Colin. Cheers. Thanks very much.
Up next is Performance of the Weekend.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Moyes here for Bots.
We probably, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
Yeah, Performance of the Weekend, lads. You know, we have plenty of nominations. Like I mentioned, Niall Sludden, who is bloody outstanding against Dublin. He's a real fine. And this is a centre-half-back underage, and he's turned into a centre-half-forward. Now, I know he does a lot of work around the field, but geez, he's able to stick it over the bar when it counts. He's done it against Donegal. He did it against Mayo last year. Like, he's an all-rounder, you know, and you throw him into the Peter Hart and the Tiernan McCann and the Matty Donnelly, and you have these four or five players who are all over that middle third section.
And I thought he was very unlucky not to get an All-Star last year. He was that good. And,
yeah, I'd agree.
He's a little whippet, and he's just, because he's playing so far out the field, it just makes him so...
Now,
evasive.
Sorry to pull you up on this now. He's, like, I couldn't believe... I went up to a Mayo press day last year, and I stood beside that Sludden. That Sludden is a beast. I'm telling you, he's the opposite of a he actually togs out a lot smaller than he is.
Yeah.
He's a monster of a man. I'm telling you, he's not that tall. But I just had to pick you up on the I'm a whippet.
So he's a little monster of a man, but the way he gets around the pitch, like, he finds these pockets of space and he goes for them like his life depends on it. And it almost, like, one of the scores he got, he caught the ball about 50 metres out from his own goal and just carried it straight through the middle and put it over himself. Like, and I don't know if that's the best blueprint to beat Dublin, but it was like, geez, here's a boy here who does not respect their reputation or achievements.
He doesn't respect anyone, I don't think, on a Gaelic football field. He
is
that
just
much
going straight at them.
Yeah.
Like, it was unbelievable to watch. And yeah, his three scores were class, but just a general play, and they couldn't get a handle on him. I think they were afraid of him by the end of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he's got serious pace as well, which I didn't think he had. He was able to get carried away. Andy Moran, lads, we've talked about him a lot already. Obviously outstanding at his age. Kieran O'Leary, fella who I often see playing for Kerry, and I never necessarily liked him that much because he just wasn't good enough for intercounty. But at club level, he's really, really good enough, you know, and he was outstanding on Saturday.
Yeah, he was superb, particularly early on in the game when it gave Crokes the impetus in the game to get ahead, and he was a real target inside. Gooch was dropping out the field a bit and popping the ball in, and he was very dangerous, left foot and right foot. Now, he missed a fair few chances too, so
it wasn't
a flawless performance. No. But he was very, very good and a constant thorn in the Corrigan defence. Really, he was the man of the match in that game, to be fair to him. And on such a big day for your club, like, it's to put in a performance on such a massive day like that, is it's huge, like
fairy tale stuff. Well, there are two of the nominations. Third nomination is Christy McCaig, and lads, to be honest, after just mentioning Christy McCaig's name there, like, is there any doubt who's after winning Performance of the Weekend?
No, not remotely. You know, again, when you put it into context, it's Club v County. At this stage of the year, the county football, it's first couple of rounds. It's not really overly important in the grand scheme of things, but to play in such a big occasion for your club, when Sloughneil, it's such a huge, huge game for them, because they would have felt that they were ready to make the step on after losing the semi-final a couple of years ago and stuff like that. So, look, they'll be absolutely delighted. And what a performance. You know, when you're given a task as a defender, oftentimes I thought about it, like, Jesus, what would be going through your head the night before a game? Like, if you're going out and you're marking the best player on the opposition team, and you're thinking, like, I'm under so much pressure here. If I don't play well, we haven't a hope of winning. Yeah. You know, it's not, sometimes as a forward you think, right, I really have to shoot the lights out here or we won't win. So for him to have that, Conley has such a big reputation, for him to go out there and he showed him kind of no real respect. I know he wasn't marking him for the whole game, but the 2 points he got in the second half from distance were just incredible scores. They really were incredible scores. And just his general play around the field, like he just was so composed in possession, never got turned over, and he dictated the tempo for a lot of the game. He was always available. You know, he's just so important to the way Stocknield play.
Yeah, no, he's an outstanding player. And listen, lads, I'm delighted to say Chrissy is actually on the line here. Chrissy, was that the best game you've ever played in your life?
Maybe in a football jersey for the club it was, I know, but look, I suppose the bigger the matches, you always want to try and play the best you can, and things worked out fairly well the other day. But look, I've been around long enough now to know that when you play well, it's definitely an added bonus. But when you get to these stages of competitions, you just want to win. You just want to win as a collective, because at the end of the day, trying to win medals is more important than any individual accolades, as nice as they are at the time.
I have to tell you, you're after winning performance of the weekend. I should have said that at the start. So we're going to send you up a GAA Hour Performance of the Weekend mug. So I know you're on a high from winning at the weekend, but this must really just top it all off.
Yeah, ecstatic with that one.
Come here, were you under a lot of pressure going into the game, Chrissy? Because you're going marking Dear McConnelly, and we had Keane Ward was on the show earlier, and he was talking about the pressure going into a game, knowing that without a brilliant performance from you, there's a very good chance your team's not going to win.
To be honest, we weren't. There's a lot of stuff, I know, stuff in the media about that I've been marking Connolly and all the rest. It probably made for pretty good headlines, but the more we analysed St Vincent's, we weren't quite sure where Dermot played at, because he lined out midfield and he was dropping deep and whatever else. So it's very hard in videos to actually pick up. But I think the moment you start getting too worried or whatever else about the opposition is the time where you start to panic. I think our biggest strength of the last number of years is we worry about ourselves first and foremost, because you have plenty to worry about, and then you give the opposition the full respect. Obviously, Connolly's, you know, maybe arguably the best player in the GAA world at the minute, but you can only play as well as the players around you, because it's a team game, and we have some really strong characters, you know, in the dressing room and on the pitch. And when you're them kind of people around you, you do feel energised and definitely inspired. And things went well for me on a personal level on Saturday, but look, I said it to a few reporters after the game, when you're a marquee forwards, as I have been for, you know, the vast majority of my career, some days it works out and some days it doesn't. I mean, there's no shame in getting beat by a better man on some days. It's going to happen. It's happened to best players, and I just, you know, probably the older I get, try and see going out against the best players as a real challenge. And you know, maybe when you look back in your career, you'll be proud to say that I marked that man that day or this man that day. And, you know, whether you get the better of him or not, it's still a good place to be.
Yeah, but I understand your point that he could have played anywhere, but there would be a very good chance that you would be on him, you know, for a large period of the game. Was the plan to attack him when you were on him?
I didn't really have any premeditated plan. It's just the way I've been playing from club for the last, well, you know, whatever number of years. I play as an attacking centre half back.
Yeah.
I suppose Dermot had a spell in full forward. Brendan took him up there, but then he came out of them. But like St Vincent's are a very unique club team in the fact that they have three or four very, very good forwards. Usually when you go into club football, you really have to worry about two or three forwards at the very most. But
yeah,
St Vincent's had definitely, you know, at least four game winners in their forward line. And that's maybe when the pressure does build, because then you're going down to your next man marker. So we're definitely a wee bit concerned about that. But look, I didn't realise there was a fair chance that I was going to be on him for a fair part of the game. But we have a very good man marker in Carl, and we're a very good man marker in Glenn Rogers too. And, you know, young Paul McNeil's going to be a bit of an unknown at the minute, but I firmly believe at 20 years of age he's going to develop into a real top class man marker too. So we're blessed to have a fair few defenders in the club at the minute, and there's a fair few coming through the ranks too.
Yeah, I was reading quotes from one of your selectors who said he gave you the advice and said, why should you worry about Dear McConnelly? Let Dear McConnelly worry about you. You get an opening, go for it, put him on the back foot. And it actually, I remembered the Dublin County Final 2 years ago when they were beaten by Ballyboden, and the man that marked Connolly that day, I think he kicked 2 points from clay and he put Connolly on the back foot, and Lee Keegan does very well on Connolly because he puts him on the back foot. You know, he gives him something to think about the other way. So the day of man marking someone on the half back line, you know, it doesn't really work that way. You have to kind of make him mark you as well.
Aye, look, and you know, I don't think people are saying a lot now about Dermot Connolly, but it's maybe more of a compliment because of how good a player he is that people are talking about my performance. You know, people maybe need to have a wee bit more respect for what the man's achieved and all the rest. But look, when you're a half-forward in Gaelic football, mate, you have an obligation to defend. You have an obligation to go back. And sometimes then you invite the attacking player onto you. And if there's very little you can do, because you could be sidetracked, tackling someone else, and you get peeled off and that kind of thing. But only John Joe Kenny could have put it in the way he did. You know, me and John Joe Kenny would have many conversations about football, and maybe our opinions would definitely differ at times. But I personally thought that maybe the way to mark Dermot Connolly would have been given someone like Ben Rogers the job to go out and just, you know, play on him all the time and forget about trying to attack. But sometimes the best laid plans don't work out that way. But it just worked okay. But look, on another day, when you're marking a marquee forward, you can have all the fun you want. And I certainly have all the fun I want and past experience with different players, but that's part of the challenge. That's part of playing at the top level.
Were you, did you feel a bit hurt by being written off? Like, I mean, I made a prediction 2 months ago on Twitter, and I thought Vincent and Cara Finn were bankers for the final, like, because, you know, they're two of the strongest teams over the last 5 years. Now, maybe I was a bit cocky the way I wrote the tweet, but it seemed from the reaction after the game that, you know, not just me, but a lot of people think that Vincent's were a foregone conclusion really hurt you as a club.
No, to be honest, I don't think it, you know, the one thing about our club is we've extremely high standards, and we've always expected a lot of our teams. And I suppose the heart of 2014 was definitely a driving factor. But at the end of the day, you have to go out and you have to earn the respect. St Vincent's have been around a fair long time now too, and so have Cara Finn. And I think that undoubtedly takes its toll. You know, it's very, very difficult to keep going because the season's 10 around them to one.
Yeah.
And at club level, at the end of the day, we're amateur sportsmen. It does take its toll. And I thought maybe looking at Cara Finn the last time, they looked, you know, a little bit tired in comparison to 14, where they were just absolutely bouncing over the ground. And people tend to forget them kind of things, you know. Like, a lot of players don't have any break because they go from a club season and an under-county season or whatever else, and mentally it's very, very tough. But timing's everything in sport, and I think our team is a lot better than it was at 14. But the beauty of that is we're making a Dr. Crokes team that are definitely every bit as good as Cara Finn were in 14, so nothing easy.
Yeah, you mentioned that you're in a better place. Has there been lessons learned? I know you're obviously very unlucky 2 years ago with injuries, but like, you were probably that bit greener back then as well. So you seem an awful lot better placed.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I said to you, nothing can replicate the experience that we've experienced in the 14 campaign. And it was the first time a club ever won an Ulster title. And you're going into an All-Ireland campaign not really knowing what to expect, but we crawled over the lane against Austin Stacks, and then Cara Finn beat us obviously well in the final. But you know, our team's a lot more mature now too, and it's changed quite a bit. People maybe don't realise that, but youth is a massive thing in sport, and freshness is a massive thing in sport. And when you look at the average age of our football team at the moment, it's something like 24. So there's no doubt about it, Gaelic games at the moment is a young man's game. So we're very blessed to have a good crop coming through there, and I think the best thing about youth is it puts the older boys on the back foot a little bit and makes them more aware about how to train better and you know how to push for places. Because if you don't have a vibe in the camp of of competing for the starting 15 positions, then you're not going to achieve anything. I'm a firm believer in that.
I saw you in second half. You won a free. It was a really important one, and you jumped up in the air and celebrated it. I know you're a big Jewel player, and you're obviously you're captain of the hurling team. That's a hurling thing, Chrissy. You're not allowed to bring that hurling celebrating freeze. That's a Waterford Clare thing. You can't bring that into football.
Yeah, God forbid you should get a passion, eh? It's probably one thing our club doesn't lack is showing a wee bit of passion. I think that's maybe why so many people have learned to respect us a wee bit more in the last couple of years. We never claimed to be the most talented, or we never claimed to be the most skillful, but I think when our camogieers or hurlers or footballers pull on the maroon jumper, that we just go out and we give it our absolute best. And maybe in today's modern era of sport, that's maybe to many quite nice to see, because everybody wants to go out and please other people, or they're maybe scared of other people's opinions. But in Slania, we just embrace who we are, and we're a very passionate bunch.
Yeah, listen, I'm only joking. It was brilliant to see. Don't worry about that at all. Listen, congratulations at the weekend on a brilliant win, and like one of the best performances I've ever seen from centre half back. And best of luck in the final.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, great stuff from Chrissy McCaig there. That's all we have time for this week. But before we go, I want to draw your attention to our brand new rugby podcast. It's not brand new. This is the second week it's out. I forgot to give you a heads up on it last week. It's called The Hard Yards. And it features Kevin McLaughlin and Donico Callaghan as pundits. Andy McGeady is presenting, and Pat McCary, our very own Pat McCary, is on it as well. So Sports Show's brand new rugby podcast, The Hard Yards. It's on SoundCloud and it's on all the podcast apps. Just search The Hard Yards and you get all your rugby stuff there. We will be back next Thursday, not this Thursday, Thursday week, because there's no football this weekend. So we'll see you then.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.